Blog Talk Radio.
Just follow the beat. For real, you can feel the excitement in the air. Leave your worries behind and just forget about your cares. Grab a Frank at Fenway and see a soft game. Cause sometimes you wanna go where everybody knows your name. Don't forget, finding a spot shouldn't be hard. Cause you can always park your car at Harvard Yard. Stop by the aquarium to watch the dolphins swim, or chill down at the harbor and watch the ships come in. Oh yeah, like Paul Revere, keep it moving, then I'm out. Eyes squinting from the glare on top of the State House. No doubt, baby, you know how we do. Cause every time that we rhyme, we shine just like the crew. Okay, all the way from Mass Ave to Harvard Square, it's clear, the spirit of the city's everywhere.
And there's nothing to do, I go shopping at the food. In the
Talk listeners, Tom Hayes here on a beautiful, beautiful Tuesday morning, June 3, 2014, and we heard a little extended version of That's the Bean and The Spirit of the City is Everywhere, because I couldn't find it on my playlist. But we have a great show today. I'm really excited about this. We had a phenomenal Wednesday show last week in which the ladies from Florida just went on and on. We were lucky to be with Catherine Dines, and we started talking about all kinds of issues that centered around the kids and the family and upbringing. Excuse me. And I don't think our guest was on the line that day, but she certainly connected with us afterwards, and I visited her site and also her Facebook page. And she has a lot to say about back basics, which is, to me, what it's all about these days, and if we, anybody who's leading the charge for that. So without further ado, whereabouts in Florida are we, Michelle?
I am in Hollywood, Florida.
Hollywood, Florida.
Hollywood.
Michelle Reynolds, ladies and gentlemen. Well, first of all, we got to do the traditional, there we go. Get the audience going here. How are you this morning?
Thank you. I'm phenomenal this morning. You?
Well, we finally have summer here. And so, yeah, it's been a brutal, brutal winter. I don't know if you've heard. But, yeah, we paid our dues big time.
I heard. My family is actually from Canada originally.
Wow.
So,
And did you spend time there yourself?
I lived there until I was about 13. And my family decided to move me to South Florida. It was a little bit of a change.
Nice. Well, what town in Canada?
Kingston, Ontario.
Oh, okay. Was that near Toronto?
It's near Toronto, yeah, right on the St. Lawrence River.
Beautiful, beautiful country. Cold, but
it
beautiful.
Is.
Beautiful.
Very
so you're nice and warm now.
Winter.
Well, the first thing I want to talk about, I'm on your, excuse me, on your Facebook page, and I see, in my world, I will fight for my child and every child fighting a battle. I will make their voices heard from the mountaintops. I will educate and bring awareness for these true warriors. I am the voice of an advocate. Did you write that?
I did not write that. But when I read that, you know, all the hair on your body stands up. It's like, oh. That's what I want to say to the world.
Absolutely.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
We've
all
been together. Well, and as you and I, you know, I did a little, I did a little reading about you on your site and everything else, and I know we come from, I used to be an absolute disciple of the law of attraction, and now I, I think it has its place. But one thing that continually seems to be the truth of that law is that we do somehow, we may not attract, get everything that we try to manifest, but we certainly do get the people around us that we are vibrating in like manner.
Definitely. We bring those people into our lives.
So, you know, that's what I feel is happening here, because everything I read about what you want to do with kids and families, and to me, when I read last night, the key word was freedom, because that's a huge battle cry of mine right now. And so you want to talk about that, what you're trying to do?
Yeah, I just, you know, we look at these little children, and as they're babies and growing up, and they're really dependent upon us. And we forget sometimes that they are people and that they have choices as well. We may, as their parents, not like their choices. We may need to guide them in a certain way, but they do have choices of their own, and they have feelings of their own that they don't exactly know how to express. So that our job as parents is not to be the authority and have them obey us, but more to teach them and guide them into expressing themselves in an appropriate way for society.
I had to give you a ta-da on that one. It will give you a little what, another one. And even a... So now that we know, you and I absolutely a million percent agree on that one, tell me about all the resistance you get when you start talking like that.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. When people start to hear that, it's like, yeah, but you have to give them behavior management. And, well, of course you do. Yes, yes, you have to do that. And you also let them choose. You know, it's not always
right.
My way. Who says my way is the best way? And the funniest part about it is this all changed for me 5 years ago when I had my son. I have a daughter who's 9, and she's just an angel. Then I had my son, and everything I knew about kids and behavior management, and it just flew out the window, I tell you. I knew nothing. And he has taught me so much. And
yeah, they do,
and
don't they?
I used to be that. It's so amazing, because I used to be that parent that, you know, I got all the behavior, the challenging behavior children in my classroom. And I always got them because I could deal with them. I never knew what I was doing different than anybody else. But when my son came along and you have to deal with it 24 hours a day, I realized, you know, it's giving him the choice, letting him express himself the way he wants to. If dinner's at 5 o'clock and he's not hungry at 5, he's hungry at 3, then really, is it that big of a deal to make him dinner at 3?
Exactly.
That's the way his body works.
Exactly. What's, you know, and first of all, when you, as you know, as you resist anything, it only, what resists, you know, the rest of that one.
Persists.
So if you really want to make yourself miserable, resist like crazy, control like crazy, and you will have an awful life.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that's I'm seeing it, you know, just in society in general, that we just have brought up a whole generation that it just doesn't know how to make their own decisions. And they do look for the authority to tell them. And I think it's time. I think people are kind of stepping outside that box and ready to make a change.
I hope so, because it certainly isn't working out the way it is.
Yeah, and everybody knows that. I don't think there's one person that doesn't feel the same way about, you know, just life, being in life in general, running the rat race, as they call it.
Well, that's what I'm glad. See, the segues are just fabulous here because, again, I focused in on that word because it's such a huge one, my passion, my battle cry, freedom, and you focused on that in your blog. And so you want to talk about that because it's not just the freedom of the kids, it's also freedom of the mothers.
Yeah, you know, Freedom of Moms, there's so much stigma for moms to follow this. I'm a perfect mom. I get dinner. I work a full-time job. I get dinner on the table. My house is always clean and the laundry is always put away. And that's just sometimes not reality, and that's okay. You know, being open and honest that, you know, today wasn't a great day. Guess what? I yelled at my kid, and I really shouldn't have. I realized later. But, you know, that's just life. You don't have to put up a facade.
So what do you think? What I see, you know, in my life, and when I look back on my life, I see that, you know, people, you talked about the rat race and everything else, and you talk about society, and so many people buy into the rat race. And they don't understand that I think, how can you teach a kid that he has choices if you don't understand that you have choices?
Yeah, it all starts with you and your personal development. I know that's what happened for me. Just over a year ago, 2 years ago, I started with the personal development and really looking at myself and what I had. And I was always taught, you are what you have. You know, so it's always the bigger car, the bigger house, more stuff. My children don't need a thing. They've got everything because that shows them I love them. And then one day after I looked around, I said, what? I don't need any of this. All we're doing is working to pay our bills. I want to go on vacation with my kids and teach them all the different things of the world. That's what matters.
So what caused this epiphany?
You know, I don't even know. It was so funny. It was my birthday, actually. It was my birthday, and I just stood in the middle of my house, and I said, great, I have this great big house. I own my own business. I have now completed every single goal I ever wanted to complete. Now what? My life's so, I'm 36. Fantastic. I'm done. And I just looked around going, yeah, but I still can't go on vacation because all we do is work to pay the bills, to pay for the house and to pay for this and to pay for that and da-da-da-da-da. And
that's right. So,
I want to take my kids around the nation. Let's learn history. Great. Let's go to, you know, Gettysburg. Let's go to Sedona. Let's really be in the moment.
Wow, there it is, right there. The word be, rather than have.
Mhm.
You know,
yeah.
Well, I mean, from what I'm hearing in the story, yes, it came at your birthday, but it also came from the realization that, you know, most of the epiphanies come from the fact that we're in pain at the moment. And so, you know, you look around and you see, well, I've achieved this, this, and this, but look at the pain that it took or the work that it took or whatever it took and all of the time and the sacrifice and the things that were lost in order to get it.
Yes, the time away from your kids to make the business, you know, run. The sacrifices that they've had to have I had a preschool. I opened a preschool in my house. So the sacrifices they needed to have all these other children in their house, and they didn't have their mom. I was home. I was here, but I wasn't with them.
Right. So all of a sudden you get this. You've accepted what so many people do, especially in our society. Well, all societies, they accept the mores and the, you know, the traditions and the customs. But, you know, in this one, unfortunately, it's all about the number. You're right. It's all about the money and the possessions and the things and the status and all of that. So you make the decision that, wow, you know, now you're going to break. So, and for all those moms that are out there listening and for the, you know, the teachers and all of the parents, not just the moms. So, you know, I think this is what's fantastic about your story is that you actually did it. You saw the folly of it all, and you just decide, hey, I'm going to change this. So then what happens?
I actually made a decision a year ago this month to close my doors. And I closed my business not knowing what on earth I was going to do next.
I love
it. All I knew was that I had to be there for my kids. My kids were not happy at all. And I needed to be around and teach them how to deal with their own emotions, because it was, I fantastically taught them the same patterns that I had been taught. And as we all do, and as I started to realize my own behavior and start to change my own behavior, I realized I really needed to spend more time with them and teach them that they can be happy. Life doesn't suck. We can make life, we have a choice here. We can do whatever we want. And stop making it about the money.
There's so much here that I know, and from my own personal life, and that I try to, you know, educate people, enlighten them. And, you know, you just meet with so much resistance. And really, the bottom line is fear, isn't it?
It really is. And it really was terrifying to close the door, not knowing where the next dollar was going to come from. Okay, well, we have all this stuff that we can... We can sell off some of our stuff. We have this big house that I can't even keep up with cleaning and whatnot. It's ridiculous. So, you know, we sell your house and you start to downsize. And as you're looking around, you're simplifying your life. And you're going, well, I really don't need, you know, 523 pens. I really only need two. Just stuff like that. Most people in America are paying over $100 for cable. And how much do you really watch TV, or do you even need to be watching TV?
Right.
So we just started looking at, you know, things like that, and we're in the process actually of selling our house and getting into something smaller.
Right.
Learning to live life.
I always like to look for the whys and the principles and the hows. And so when you make this kind of decision, it was a decision to really take a bold leap from what everybody else does and also from what you were doing and what seemed to be the comfortable way. So, I mean, you have to have some kind of underlying, I don't know if you want to call it faith, belief, knowledge, trust. And so you obviously had that you kind of sensed that, okay, I'm bold enough and I'm going to get rid of the fear and I'm going to move ahead. Because I know that somehow, deep down, I know this is going to work. So what is that thing that makes you, help you make the move?
I think it was faith. I just had faith that if I did what I needed to do for my family, for myself, it made me a better person, it made my kids a better person. I know that there are many people in the past year that thought I was completely crazy.
Of course they do.
Yeah, I got a lot of flack. But now as they see it all coming back together and they see, you know, I'm starting to get out there, it's like, great, now I've got this. You see, somebody mentioned to me the other day, you know, your kids have never been so happy as they have been in the past 5 months.
Yep.
Now, I was only hoping it would have taken me 5 months. Apparently, it took me a whole year. But,
right.
You know. I just had faith it was still going to work out. I said I'm an educated, hardworking person, and when we need the money, then I will find it. I will do whatever it takes. If I have to clean houses, I'll clean houses. You know,
right. I found a deeper magic, if you want to call it magic or whatever, than that somehow money materializes. Opportunities come.
Yeah. They really do.
You want to talk about that?
They really do. You know, it's the funniest thing. You need something, and having a daycare, I had a ton of stuff. You want to talk about an overload of just stuff. So it just to this day, if my wallet is out of cash, I have a message from Craigslist in my email saying somebody wants to buy something else.
Yep.
It's the funniest thing.
Yep. You know, that's the, I'm going to be so bold as to say the miracles that I've seen even in my life that, I got caught. We all do. I mean, we believe so much and trust. We blindly believe the system that, you know, we got to get out and we got to work, and we've got to work real hard, and we got to put in the time, and we got to rush, and we got to run, and we got to, like you say, set a goal, get another goal, acquire, get more, keep moving, 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 because that's the American way, and that's life. And then down deep, there's this voice telling you, you know, maybe this ain't right, you know. you know, why? And
there was
I
a
think
voice
so
telling
you,
me, yeah. You know, this can't be it. This can't be it, really?
And that's, now I'm glad you talked about the voice. It was, you know, last week I had Roxanne on, and it was interesting because we both talked about a book that we had so much in common, it was really spooky. I mean, you know, on some of the transcendental, mystical things that we've both encountered. And one of the things that we had both read a book called Writing Down Your Soul, Getting in Touch with the Voice Within. And that voice has always been there. And so, and obviously you were hearing hints of it that, you know, guided you to where you made the jump, the leap of faith.
Yes. I did. Well, I heard many voices, but
I know.
In the past year, I've been able to bring it down to only one, which is really great.
Yeah,
but,
the one that tells the truth.
The one that tells the truth. What is my purpose here?
Yep,
you know,
exactly.
We all have a purpose. How do we make life? We're all here together, and what I, you know, one of the big things I realized is that we're all the same. We all have the same struggles and insecurities, and we're all the same. So learning that,
right.
Nobody's better than you, nobody's worse than you. You know, all of our behavior is so typical.
Yeah, we're all playing the same game. We're all really doing the same story, which is, you know, in my opinion, we come here as what we really are, is amazingly powerful creatures. And we play this game of where it's all hidden from us, and we're all, you know, petrified and afraid, and we react rather than procreate. And then all of a sudden, like you say, you run the race, and then you get these little signs like you did, and that I certainly did, that, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. You know, is this really what the purpose of all of this is just to keep running and running and not having time and just acquiring things, and then boom, you know, you say, oh, let me try another way, and somehow it unfolds, and that's really the magic, like it's unfolding for you.
Oh, yeah, and it's just magic, because I, you know, you don't even know from one day to the next sometimes what you're going to do, but as you mentioned, you just, as the more, the quieter I got, and the more I listened to the voice inside me, the more I knew what I was supposed to do. And as I put it out there, I mean, I've just stumbled upon people, you know, person after person after person that, you know, like you, believes the same thing.
Yep.
So together, we can make a difference.
Yep. You know, we do, you know, again, for those, I imagine that the people we're attracting to this show are the kind of people who are receptive to it. And hopefully we get somebody who isn't, and that they start to say, you know, they come away from a program like this and say, wow, you know, let me see, you know, boy, I have that same voice. And rather than thinking it's crazy, but that's the real me telling me what I want to do. And if I trust that and go with it, it'll all be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, those people that are going into work every single day waiting for Friday, you know?
Yep.
And then the weekend
Monday
comes, and they're dreading Monday.
Right, and they've only got 2 days to quote-unquote live, but they don't, because they're doing all the errands and the chores and running around, and nobody has any free time, and they just go, you know, look at the malls on the weekend. They, you know, I call them the temples. You know, the malls are our current-day temples. And so you work, work, work all week, and then you go spend on Saturday and Sunday thinking that that's going to take away some of the pain.
It's exactly the trap we, you know, we get caught in. Yeah,
okay.
For sure.
So now how do you take our message and our learning, our understanding of this. How do you sell this? How do you get it across? How do you touch that nerve in people? And have you seen cases where, you know, you're seeing transformations in people? They are trusting you. They are making a difference. They are pulling away.
I'm just starting to see people trust in that. Like I said, you know, over the past year and a half, people have just thought, oh, my God, I don't know what's going on with this chick. But now they're going, wow, now I get it. Now I see it. So I think people are starting to come around, and I've noticed whether I've attracted more and more people, you know, that way into my life. I've just noticed so many more people, especially women, stepping through the fear and going for what they love, you know, stop that job and do what they really are passionate about. And the reality is we model that for our kids. Our kids are going to want to do what they're passionate about too.
I'm laughing because, again, this is what my whole mission in life has been for some reason, is to say to people, wake up. It's not like this. You know, be happy. Do what, follow your passion, even though, you know, the first thing they say, well, you'll never make money at it. How do you know?
How do you know? And, you know, we're telling our kids, dream big. You can be whatever you want to be.
Yeah, but go
and
to college.
And then we're going into
yeah, go to college, get into debt, and then take a job to try to pay it off the rest of your life. But don't do what I tell you. Do what I'm showing you.
Yeah. Yeah, because then the parents are going into their cubicle, you know, wishing for Friday, hating that Monday's coming. And our kids, they're smart. And they follow what we say. They follow what we do.
That's right. Exactly. So you so obviously you're the embodiment of what, you know, kudos to you because you had the courage to take the leap off the cliff, you know, that big giant leap of faith, knowing that you can trust that inner voice. So what do you say to people? What's your message? How do you tell all the people that are listening out there right now, hey, you know, you can do this? You start to see that fear.
I did a lot of coaching. I had people, you know, that I partnered myself with that when I thought the world was falling apart, you know, I could call them up. And just having those people that do encourage you and say, you can do it. You know, okay, what do we need to do today? And my biggest mission right now is getting out and doing a lot of speaking, trying to empower women to make the change so that their kids will see it, trying to empower the early education system is what I focus on, to make the change as well. Kids spend so many hours a day there that we need to see those teachers, you know, making changes as well. So now a lot of speaking and consultations.
Right. Well, you know, you just hit on a couple of points. First of all, let me remind people that the call-in number is 347-996-3903. Again, 347-996-3903. We're talking with Michelle Reynolds. And why don't you give your websites right now?
My website is Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-L-E, dash Reynolds, reynolds.com.
Great. And then you also have a blog. You have a blog too?
Yes, it's on my website. It's attached to
my
website.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so so you again, first of all, I people don't understand. You know, I don't know why I'm as passionate about it as I am, but I'm extremely passionate about our society, what's become of society, what's happened to women, what's happened to men, what's happened to families, what's happened to the society as a whole. And, you know, I lived through the 60s. You know, I saw, quote, unquote, women's liberation, you know, hear me roar, blah, 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 blah. And I, as a person who I guess always was struggling with this fact that, you know, it took me later in life to find out my true calling. you know, because I believed everybody else, you know, the model that was set up, go to college, get the job, work the 40 years, you know, then retire, blah, blah, blah. And so my thing, innate, deep down, my voice was always telling me, why would you want to go into those, one of those big buildings with all those cubicles and be locked up for 8 to 10 hours a day? Why? You know, and yet I saw, and it was just insanity to me. I postponed it as long as I could by going to graduate school because I loved the freedom. I loved learning. I loved the freedom of being with my friends. You know, you went to school 15 hours and maybe you worked another 20 to 30 studying, but, you know, you had free time. You were fun. Life was play. And then to see this mass movement. Mm. We're going to have careers. And I'm like, why?
Why?
I want to stay home.
And to be locked inside our earth is amazing. It's about being outside and being in nature.
Yes.
In my eyes.
And, you know, and there was this, it seemed like this whole, this mass movement, everybody bought what a couple of people were saying. What they sold to them, and they blindly followed without thinking, and then became disciples of it, preaching to those who made the decisions, you know, because my wife stayed home and brought up the kids, and it was like, you always got this condescending, oh, you stay home. I always revolted. I always was an advocate for the opposite, and I was always a warrior trying to say, what are you doing? What are you doing to your kids? Because you know something? I grew up in an inner city where we were definitely poor. We were below average income, and we didn't have a lot of times. We were richer than most because we had food to eat, but there were times when there was no heat. There was times when, you know, it was really rough. There was never a new car, blah, blah, blah. But guess what? You know, I had a mother and a grandmother who were always there when I walked through the door at 3 o'clock.
Hmm.
And that's what I ran home to, knowing, and everybody wore house dresses in those days. I went in there looking for those house dresses because I saw that, and it was this feeling of security. And then the first words out of my mouth, what's for supper?
Of course. And you got a nice home-cooked meal.
and everybody
so quickly.
Everybody sat down.
Yes.
And ate. You were required, as we talked about this last week on the show. And, you know, I'm sure this is one of the things you talk about with Back to Basics. So I looked at a whole generation of women buying into it blindly. Nobody told them about the 40 to 60-hour work weeks. Nobody told them about all that time away from their kids. Nobody told them the cost of this decision to have, quote-unquote, the career. And even today, the ones who went through it defend it. Oh, yeah, but I had my career. But what do you got now? I know so many women now my age who are absolutely all alone. And I look at them and go, so how did it work out for you?
Yeah, how'd that work for you? And, you know, one of the most interesting things that I've learned over the past 2 years with this whole leap is I was one of those women. And it was like, what do you mean do you stay home with your kids? What do you do all day?
Yep.
And I worked with kids, so I thought the judgment. And so in the last 2 years going through all of this, I swear everything in my life I have ever judged about anybody I have now experienced, I believe. I've learned to experience it. Now I go, now I understand why you stay home with your kids. Now I see what you were doing.
It's called L-O-V-E.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it takes time and it takes effort. And you can't do it in the 2 hours that you're home between work, dinner, homework, and bedtime.
Can you imagine?
And
maybe an
extracurricular activity.
Yeah, imagine racing all day long to spend an hour with your kids. What?
Mm-hmm.
An hour. Why did you have them?
Mm-hmm. Why'd you have them?
Why? And you don't even sit down to dinner with them? Why? What possessed you to do that? Did you just blindly? Maybe they'd be better off than you better if that never happened.
And, you know, I think it's that's the model that we just followed. That's just the way it was. And hopefully.
Yeah, and everybody bought into it. You know, when people get it, yeah. what is your thing about this? I see my thing about it is because every one of us has to live with the consequences of that movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everybody.
And again, we're raising a society of children that don't know how to express themselves. They don't know how to make choices. They're in daycare. They're in school. They're in after school where they're told exactly what they're supposed to do, when they're supposed to do it. They don't have a choice in the majority of them. They don't know how to make choices for themselves.
Well, you know, you said you quit. Why don't you tell us about that? You quit teaching.
I quit teaching. I did. I had taught for 10 years at the same school, and I actually had worked aftercare many years before that at the same school. And I always had the struggling. I did first grade and second grade, and I always took the struggling students. I always had the behavior, the challenging behavior children. I had the ESE kids, and one year I was able to do whatever I wanted with them, and it was the most amazing year of my life. The strides that these children made were amazing, and I put my whole heart and soul into it. And the next year they looked at me and said, no, we can't do that again. Because they get paid money for these kids. If they don't make the grade, the school actually gets paid money. And so it just shattered. It shattered me. And down here in Florida, you're not allowed, you know, if it's math time during that segment, you better be teaching math. You know, I don't care if little Johnny over there, you know, hasn't eaten in 3 days and he's having a meltdown. You better not be giving him snack because it's math time. You'll be written up. And I said, I'm not doing this. You're not giving these kids what they want. You're not giving them what they need. You're telling me how to teach them when you're not even in here. And I'm not doing it. It's not good for them, and I'm not doing this anymore. And
Rob,
I resigned.
Wait a minute. Let me get it. Let me get it. Here we go. I'm beaming. So what did you do? What were the things that you did that you saw the improvements, the strides?
I actually had access to help. So there were two teachers in the room for reading and two teachers in the room for math. We took away science, social studies was all done through books and through actually my very favorite show, Blue's Clues.
Yep.
I don't know if you've ever seen that show, but that was what we would watch that during snack, and I would pause it. You know, they ask a lot of questions. They really get them thinking. There's a lot of science in that show. And so I would stop it. They're eating their snack. We're having conversation. I actually reached out to the Kiwanis Club in our community who donated over $2,000 for different curriculum because these children were so low that I couldn't use the first grade stuff the school had given me. I needed to go back to preschool and up and get them from a preschool level to a first grade level. So it needed to be quick. And I needed different materials, and the Kiwanis Club stepped up. They were absolutely amazing. We did a lot of reading, writing, and math with our focus, along with talking. And my kids knew that not every kid walks at the same pace. So don't tell me that so-and-so is in the low group. That was a really... I was really strict on that nobody in this class is low or dumb or this or that. We are all just trying to get better at what we're doing. No baby gets up and walks at the same time. I said, you can't keep up with me with my strides, can you? And you don't talk about somebody else in their reading. And they were just so encouraging of each other. It was amazing.
Wow. You're right. You know, the model, I go into talk to inner city schools, and when I go back, I see the folly of it. You know, it's such a jolt for me to see, to, you know, from my life, you know, being as free as I want to be, and then to go into a place where everybody's sitting in these hard chairs, which are now too small because most of the kids are overweight, and they're confining, and they sit in these rows, and they got to be quiet, and they got to be, and it's like, oh my, the torture.
Oh yeah,
these kids are in pain. They are in pain all day long.
Yes, you know, what adult could sit in those chairs all day long? We're talking almost six to seven hours, and even when they go to lunch, they're not allowed to talk.
Right.
They might have 15 minutes of recess, and I don't know, different parts of the country are different. Here in Florida, it has to be teacher-conducted recess now. It has to be the teacher telling them, again, what to do. Not allowed to use their own brains and imaginations.
And more, you know, it's the more that gets out of, the more and more that the kids are out of control because the kids have been controlled. And, you know, again, what resists persists. The more
that's
they're
right.
Tightening up. So it's not unlike the Gestapo. It's not unlike any ism. It's not like unlike Nazism or whatever. And, you know, so we're going to control. We're going to push harder. We're going to, you know, and all that does is just create more and more unrest, more and more, you know, unhappiness, more and more hate. And, you know, and how can you, so what is, how do you see the institutions, the people, the masses getting it? I mean, how is that going to happen?
Oh, boy. I'm not quite sure yet. I just don't know. I think the more of us that come together that have the same vision and voice and ideas, and like I know my big goal, if I could do anything, I had all the money in the world, I would create a community that had a school. And
yep.
See if it got picked up to be, you know, to be franchised or around. Is it, and I want to focus on early education because if we can get that generation, I believe it will filter over into our elementary and our secondary education. That would be my
hope. Absolutely. Well, you know, we're fighting bureaucracy, we're fighting tradition, we're fighting, it's in, you know, all the power, you know, well, first of all, let me do it. I think I say it every show. When I do speak to teachers, I stumble. I hated school. I was disciplined because I went to the parochial schools and the nuns walked around and whacked you with a stick. You know, I mean, there was corporal punishment. There was, let me just put it this way. There was violence. In the grammar school. And then it got worse when I went to parochial high school because then they had these big brothers who were literally bigger than all of us. And they used their fists, you know, and sticks to beat us. And, you know, you know, there was one of the happiest day of my life was graduating from high school. I hated that place. And then I even went on to a college where, you know, there was a dress code, and it had this bigger guy. He was like 6'9", and if you were walking around campus without that suit and coat and tie, if you had a sweater and a tie, he'd literally grab you, physically grab you, and rough you up. So, you know, imagine education being like that. And so, you know, if it wasn't for college, I would have never read another book of my life. I mean, I had 3 hours of homework every night. It was always in things I didn't like to study, et cetera. And I didn't understand learning could be fun until I started reading books that were fun, but as opposed to a grade. So the whole system is just locked in and done. And people are buying it. That the part that is this acceptance that it's dogma, that it's the way it is, and that's the way it's always been, and that's the way it has to be. So
and that's
you're
why
right.
Shows like this are so important. Getting the word out, whether it's, you know, over a blog talk radio or social media or standing up in front of just a few people, you know, our voices need to be heard. And we need to gather as a community and a village.
Well, I want to say to all the women out there that I am the ultimate feminist because I know of no more powerful creature than a woman. from a man's standpoint. A woman, when she sets her mind and her body and her spirit and her soul to it, let's face it, let's really get, for all of the talk, for all of the shifting over the what women assume to be the power of men because they maybe they own the businesses or whatever, I'm sorry. All societies have been molded by women. The women set the mores and the cultures and the traditions, the etiquette, the societal. They are the ones. Men are totally out of control. Men, if left to their own devices, would all be drinking beer and fishing and watching sports.
They really would.
Would be as gross, and I'm a male telling you this, the only thing that kept men in check for centuries was the female. It was the female who decided how the house would be decorated. It was the female who decided how that, what time dinner was, what would be for dinner, how you would dress for dinner, how you would act at the table.
Yes.
What was, I mean, am I wrong on this?
Absolutely, perfectly right.
Okay, and then along come the 60s, and this hatred for men. They asked Joyce Carol Oates, who wrote the Bell Jar, brilliant author, and they said to her, "Are you a feminist?" She said, "Why would I belong to any organization that used fear and hate and victimization as its guiding principles?" And she was a self-made woman. And, you know, I mean, nobody's ever answered that for me when I ask people that. So all of a sudden, women decided that they weren't the most powerful, that the ones who were most powerful were the men. And so we go to war with them, you know, and we decide this and this and this. And, and as you know, you become what you hate.
Yes, you do.
You become what you hate. And tell me that we haven't seen the, let me see the problem, masculization of women. And also, and totally the feminization of men.
Yes. There's got to be a balance.
Well, I mean, and that comes from going back to your innate power, which is you're a woman. There's a Camille Buscaglia was a feminist that I absolutely loved, and she was the most militant of all the feminists because she said, ladies, don't believe Helen Gurley Brown and don't believe Gloria Steinem. The men don't have the power. We have the power. And the power, the deepest part of our power is our womanhood, is our sexuality, is our, that is our power. Use it, flaunt it. There's nothing wrong with being a woman. This power that you're giving to thinking that men have the power, it never was, it never existed.
And you don't have to be, you know, I think that all goes back to you have the power inside of you, and it
exactly.
all comes from love.
Exactly. And being who you are, and you said it earlier in the show that it was about being, not having.
Being authentically you, being in the moment, being with the people that you are with, and not judging, just being.
That's right. You know, I mean, I just know that you, from your readings and from what you said, you know, there is a yin and a yang. There is a hard and a soft. And, you know, if you've read anything about the Tao, it's the soft always overcomes the hard. And people have forgotten that. They all think that hard is going to overcome hard. But hard just gets resistance and takes you away from your true power. And as you know, when you're dealing with these... Go ahead.
You always
when
get
you're
more
dealing
with
the,
honey.
Exactly.
Right?
And we all know what the honey is. That's right. And when you were dealing with the kids, screaming and yelling at the kids got you what?
Nowhere.
Right. That's right.
Nowhere. They would get them just in a bad mood.
Yep. And more resistance and everything else. So, you know, kudos to you. I mean, and it, you know, when I talk about this stuff, I'm just like, oh, you know, you're just a male and you don't understand. So I need, when I find women like you who see it, and, you know, and you know, the one, when I get out of control and I get frustrated, there's one argument that I always use against real staunch feminists, and I say, well, we had to fight for this, and we have to, and it's still bad. And it's, no, it's not. No, 50% of the homes owned in this country are owned by single females. you know, the 28%, I think it's now 28% of the breadwinners in, it was like 26% of the breadwinners are male, 28% of the breadwinners now are female. You know, I saw all the changes, you know, women fought for their careers, and rightly so. You know, nobody should be denied a job, especially if a woman needs that and is a single mother or whatever. And, you know, you definitely deserve it. When I was in sales and I had four of my seven reps were females, you know, because I hired on talent, nothing else. So, I mean, I practice mm-hmm. everything I preach. And so all of these things were given. Credit was achieved, the right to own a house, all of the things that didn't exist before. Great. So now what have you got? You got 50% of the houses owned by single women living alone, okay, trying to bring up kids. Okay, is that good for a society? You know, but
is
never
mind that.
Is that good
for the children?
Is, all right,
yeah.
Is that good for the children? Is that really what we wanted to do? Is that what, you know, we wanted to achieve? So. But the one thing I said, so all of those things were achieved through the voice and the solidarity of women getting together. The women got all of that. Okay, now I'm going to ask you, and you must know this. Women in this society, pregnancy leave is 3 months. Women, it's a known fact, are not taking the 3 weeks. They're taking 3 months, rather. They're taking the 3 weeks. They have,
yeah,
because
I don't
of
know
fear,
how they do that.
Because of fear,
yeah.
They run back to the office because somebody might take their job. Okay, now, so then here's the argument that levels all, that nobody has an answer for. When I tell them your European sisters get 3 years maternity.
Ah, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now how did they get that and you don't? And then there's just
in
a complete surrender.
Yeah, instead. Canada gets a year.
Yeah.
Full pay.
So, right. So now all you hear is, well, their governments did it. Listen, you had a government and you had a society that didn't give you, you know, have careers, that didn't give you equal pay, that didn't give you credit, that didn't give you the right to own a house by yourself. And you got all of that. And what if all of those things materialized? The bottom line with all of those things is money. But for your children, what do you think would happen tomorrow if that became the battle cry of every woman in this country?
If every woman in the country demanded they get the year
yeah.
or 3 years?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, would they do it?
No,
I don't
that's
a lot
the
of
thing.
Trust in our government.
if they knew that more than 50% of the population that votes wanted it,
do we have the money behind us that they would do it? See, I believe it's all about the money with them.
Well, yeah, but how, wait a minute. Europe is thriving.
That's true.
These become the excuses. I think these are the dialogues that have to be discussed.
True. I mean, I would really hope they would. I really do.
Well, but history has shown us that everything that became an issue was achieved.
With over 50% wanting it, then
yeah,
it should.
I mean,
when women
said we're going to work and we're going to get our jobs and we're going to get our careers, you're going to hire us, blah 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 blah. And then it was like, okay, now we want equal pay. And some people say, well, I don't know about that, but. It's certainly at parity, a lot closer than it was previously. So that was achieved. Credit was achieved. Home ownership was achieved. Certainly, standards, mores inside the office were totally about sexual harassment. All of those goals were achieved.
So why are we not fighting to stay home?
Hello? I would love to see that become the battle cry tomorrow.
Yeah, I actually, you know, that's very, very interesting you brought that up because I did post something about that not too long ago on my Facebook page. And I had a lot of women come back with, I hope you're not saying that we should stay home.
Yeah, there you go. There it goes.
And
right.
I was like, oh,
yep.
No, I just think you should have more time to raise your baby.
Yep. Hello. Yeah, see, again,
mm-hmm.
where is this total acceptance that, that is wrong to want to be at home, to want to be free, to want to get up in the morning you know, not have to, you know, get your kids, be there for your kids, send them off to school, be there when they come home, whatever. You know, and when you look at, maybe I'm just too, I can put all this together and other people aren't, can't, I don't know. Today, people are living into their 80s and 90s. If you have a family of 2 to 3 kids, it'll take you what? From the time they're born till the time they're 10, maybe 10, 12, 13 years to get them out. So we're talking a decade out of 8.
Mm-hmm.
What's the problem?
Yeah. What I see no problem with it. But there is definitely a lot of resistance.
Yep.
Maybe they just don't know how to be parents.
It's not, evidently, it's not glorified. It's something that they can, you know, they can go to a place where they can drop off their kids and let them, those people take care of them.
Yeah, and then they get to say, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer, I'm a...
Right.
And right. We have all this stuff.
Yeah. And I'm a more important than that person who takes care of my kids. You know, I met a a limousine driver in New York City when he was about 10 years ago, and he was Muslim, and he had come from one of the Arab countries. And I said to him, what do you think of America? And he said, interesting. And he says, you have an interesting society. He says, all of the old people get put in homes, and they're shocked that their children will put them in homes. He says, and why should they be shocked? Because when they were born, you put them in a home.
How interesting. Now, that is an interesting thing to look at.
So he
and
said,
how true.
And he said, when I was born, you said F you to me and had other people bring me up and take care of me. So now when you're old, F you to you.
You can go too.
You can go too.
Yeah.
You know,
How true is that?
I mean, are we talking anything that's not true?
No, I've never looked at it that way. That's something to ponder. But I the light bulb goes off with, of course. And you think about how it used to be. We get back to basics. It was a village that raised.
That's right.
You know,
and,
the kids.
When I grew up, the door was always open. Neighbors came in, extended family came in. Extended family lived with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were relatives. The door was always open. Food was always being served. Conversation was always happening.
You did something wrong 3 blocks away. Your mom knew about it within a few minutes.
Exactly.
And that person had no problem pointing out to you. You know that's not how you're supposed to behave.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, I had recently had a friend who's no longer a friend because he was bringing up, he had never been a parent, and he decided at 70 years of age he'd get married and married a younger woman from another country, and she brought her son. And with that kid, the kid used to have his head on the table next to the plate and would be rifling rice into his mouth, and nobody would say anything to him but me. And everybody said, well, you're wrong. It's this kid. And I said, I'm sorry. It takes a village to raise a kid. I can't sit there. As a result, I just stopped going to the house because I said, I can't sit there and watch this happen.
Yeah.
What's this kid going to be, 30 years old with his head on the table shoveling rice into his mouth?
We have to learn
because
to be people.
Yeah, and so, you know, I decided that, you know, but you're right. There is no sense of ownership that every single kid is, you know, we all have a. If we're going to have a society that's viable and happy and works, then we all have to look out for that. That's why I think you and I, we don't have a. You know, when you started to listen to talk about the voice and everything else, we both know we really don't have any other choice but to do this. We do have choice, but we're not going to take them because this is our calling.
Yeah, it's what makes you tick. It's what, you know, I looked at my husband one day and I said, if I'm going to be sitting here and reading books for fun regarding a child's brain and the brain development, I think that tells me something. That must be what I like to do.
Absolutely. And I loved what you said something that you posted that putting kids, here's another thing that is just blindly accepted, taking a kid at 5 or 6 and putting them in school at that point when they're ready, they are clearly not neurologically wired to be optimally wired to learn.
Yes. And that's a stigma right there. Oh, my goodness. You keep your kid home and people are jumping all over you, you know. But if they're not ready.
Right. And so, you know, so it really takes, you know, from everything that you said today, it really takes, I think the only way, you know, we can be a guiding light for women, because it really does have to start with, I mean, you know, hopefully there are guys out there who understand that. I certainly did. I was not going to allow my children to come home to an empty house. It's not going to happen. You know, and they were certainly the first 5 years, they were not going to somebody else to be reared and spend time away. It just wasn't going to happen. So, you know, I lived it. I practice everything that I preach. And as a result, you know, my kids are pretty exceptional kids. They're happy. And they are doing what they love to do. Yeah, what a concept. They are happy. So, but I think it really comes down to there's so much that people are blindly, you know, when I see the expressway in the morning here in Boston and I look at all those cars just deadlocked for hours. So they spend 2 hours on the road before they even get to a place where they spend 8 to 10 hours and then another 2 hours. And I say, how do they do that?
Yeah. Again, that goes back to, is this all we got? Like, is that why we're really here?
You get in a car and then sit in the cubicle and then da-da-da-da-da. But there is hope, excuse me, and I think unlike any other time in history, I mean, one of the things I was going to allude to earlier, when I do speak to teachers, and you can back me up on this because you were a teacher and you are a teacher now, the first thing I say to them, before I begin my lecture, I would like to have you show me by hands, fingers, how many great teachers you had in your lifetime. And I said, I know the answer, but I want you to think for a second, and I don't care if it's a macrame teacher or a yoga teacher, a ski instructor, mathematics, science, history, geography, whatever. I want you to think, stand out, how many great teachers you've had. And I know and there's never more than one hand raised, and there's never more than 3 fingers.
Yeah.
And usually, that's the norm. 3 is the number. And once in a while I get a wise guy raises both hands, and I go with 10 fingers, and I just immediately say, you lived in a community with less than 10,000 people and or you went to a private school, and then the hands drop. So I say, don't count. You're an exception.
Doesn't count.
So then I ask the teachers, what is it that made them great? And I say, I already know the answer. And they think for a little while, and then it always comes to the same thing. They cared. And then I say, how do you know they cared?
Shocking.
I said, and then how do you know they cared? And the answer is always the same. They listened. And I said, isn't it interesting?
They listened.
Isn't it interesting that the great teachers, that in a profession that is supposed to impart wisdom, that is supposed to take wisdom from your head and impart it to the young, to the people who don't possess the wisdom, that the characteristic that makes that teacher great is that they listened. And then I said, now, this is the one that horrifies them. I says, okay, imagine somebody, one of your students is in a room 20 years from now, and somebody like me asks these questions. Are you going to be on that hand? And the horror is the silence as they look at those fingers. And they know they're not going to be there.
Wow.
And so now, everybody surrenders the power, because what you're talking about is empowering people, especially the women, who are going to get the changes, because it's been demonstrated over the last century that the women, when the women set their mind to it, things happen around here.
It's going to get done.
It's going to get done, ladies. Unlike what you believe, you have the power. Stop thinking that it's the guys that have the power. You have the power. So when the women get around to it, and everybody, even the teachers, well, what can we do? You know, it's the way
it is. I've noticed so many teachers that just are, you know, they've given up.
Yep.
What can we do? You know,
yep.
I go in, I do my job, and I leave.
Yep, hello.
And I think, again, that's all you got? Come on.
That's right. And you're going to put in 20, 30 years at this, and the kids suffer, and you suffer. I see the suffering. I see it every time I go into a classroom. I see the suffering. The teachers are in pain, and the kids are in pain. When is it going to stop?
Yeah.
When you know,
is enough enough?
Now, there is hope. Because
there's always hope.
Exactly. And I saw a lecture by an Indian a theoretical physicist who left theoretical physics to become an educator, and he started doing all these studies, and he found out that the best schools were the ones with the best teachers, hello, in India, and that they were always in the cities or areas close to the city because teachers wanted to live a good life, and the best teachers got the best jobs and wanted to live with all the amenities of living in an urban environment, and that the schools that suffered were in the outlying. So then the Indian government said, well, we'll fix this. We'll educate those teachers in the hinterlands. And instead, when they got smart, they all moved to the city. So this one guy, I forget his name, but it's a pretty popular TED Talk, et cetera. He decided to take a computer and dump it in the middle of New Delhi and make it like an ATM where the kids could go in. It was obviously built for children. And he set it up, and the kids in the neighborhood said, well, what is it? And he said, I don't know. I don't know what it is. And immediately the kids went in, and they couldn't speak English. But he says, and 8 hours later he came back. The kids had learned enough English to surf the Internet and download a game and were playing it. And he said, oh,
look
I might
at
have
that.
Learned. Yeah, so somebody came along and said, oh, somebody must have come by and shown him that. So he said, okay. So he took it out into the woods, you know, into the hinterlands in the countryside where there was nobody computer literate, nobody. And he did the same thing, same effect. 8 hours later, da-da-da-da. So then he went to the kids and said, gee, I would like to find out what water's made of. What is water made of? And he'd come back in a few hours, and the kids would tell him, well, it's H2O. And because they would go and they would find it. And he saw that what was happening, he says he started to realize that they were, and I forget the criteria he used, but he called it a 30% efficiency, learning efficiency, without a teacher there and just a computer. So he decided then that he would ask, he even asked them about quantum physics and gave them problems to 12-year-olds. And these kids were coming back. They would struggle and struggle. But the thing is, he found out they never gave up. And even though they weren't mastering it, they were learning stages of it, which would lead later to them really comprehending it. So he decided then that why not see what would happen if he brought an adult into the situation who knew nothing about computers but only what he called the grandmother effect, encouraged the kids and said, why aren't you kids smart? Aren't you wonderful? Aren't you brilliant? Oh, look at what you did. Oh, isn't that wonderful? And he got another 20% increase in the coefficient of whatever it was of learning. So these kids were learning at rates far in excess of what was happening in a normal classroom. And the reason
I was going to say,
the kids are not competing with each other. They're helping each other.
They're helping each other.
They all saw
and
this
look at
five
that.
Or six Five or what a concept. Five or six
what
kids around the computer helping each other learn about the computer. And he says, gone are the days where you have to store all of this data in your head. We all know. You can solve any argument today. Go, let me Google it. We'll settle this.
Yeah.
Because the facts are there. And so
everything's right there. And when we work
everything
together.
Everything is right there. And he says, so what do we still have in the classrooms?
Better.
What we have in a classroom today is what existed in the offices and in the factories and everything, people sitting by themselves in rows, whether it's cubicles and or sewing machines or whatever, producing things in solitary mode. And he says, and how are our classrooms and our test rooms? We present problems to kids, and we set them in this testing room where they're all supposed to solve it by themselves. And we give them grades, and the grades are competitive, blah, 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 blah. And he says, and yet nothing with any company that has any worth at all, or is that a progressive company that's changing society, does it work that way. They all work in teams, and they all use computers.
And then children get into these working environments, they don't know how to work in teams.
Right, right. And so the
efficiency, they've never been taught that.
Right. The corporations have figured out that it's more efficient, but the educational system is light years behind. So there is hope, because my daughter called me and she says, "What do I do? I got this great kid who's free. He's going to a preschool where they're in the woods most of the day, and they're creating things and they're doing la da 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 da. And there's no media. And what do I do?" I said, "Don't send him. Do not send him to a school. Home educate him. Do not put him in that jail."
Yeah. Oh, it's so interesting you brought that up, because there's a girl on YouTube, Josie Outlaw. Have you heard of her?
No.
She has a very, very interesting YouTube video that describes the difference between, or lack of, the institution, school, and prison.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to watch that about 3 or 4 times and then pick my jaw up off the floor at how similar they are.
It is jail. It is jail.
Yeah. And it just, like, I never thought about it that way before. And I just watched that going, oh, my gosh. Well, no wonder this is happening, and no wonder that's happening. No wonder you're getting these behaviors and that behavior. And I don't know about in Boston. I know down here the homeschooling environment is just exploding right now. Everybody, it seems, I meet is a new person putting their children through homeschool.
Great.
So that's a big thing down here.
Well, it is an answer, because the other thing is so corrupt and outdated and obsolete and bureaucratic and cumbersome and non-creative. It's just amazing that, well, what have you got? You've got students who went to school their whole lives and then stay in the school. They never graduate. They got degrees, and then they just become part of the incestuous whole system. I was a student, now I'm a teacher.
Yeah.
And it all comes down to the grade, doesn't it? It doesn't really come down to what you know when you leave here. It all comes down to the grade. And I have the power to give you the grade. I have the power to tell you what you did wrong.
Yes, and here, if your children do not get the grade, you don't get paid.
Yes, exactly. So it's all about the mark. Not about what they really retain, not really what molds or shape the student, how they're able to solve problems, how they're able to adjust, how they can, deal with, society and adversity and overcome problems and become real, really develop their character. Forget it. So what that piece of paper said, they passed, and everybody's happy. Oh, my kid, passed the core exam and... Now you are obviously, how your clients, who are they, why do they come to you, what do you see that you do that changes it?
My clients right now are mostly, two different things. Either they're parents that need to, that are looking for a different way to teach their children, and I bring that curriculum in. A lot of parents are saying, these kids don't come with a handbook. I don't know what to do. So I have those people that I'm working with. And I also have a few daycares and in-home daycares that I am a consultant for, where I will go in and help them organize how they teach, their curriculum, and again, they want to do things differently. They don't want to follow the norm anymore. So, you know, the way I get out there is just speaking and spreading my message, and people are coming.
Where do you get the audiences to speak to? What kind of audiences?
Either moms, a lot of moms groups, some church groups, and then there's also conferences. So for family daycare, there's conferences, early childhood conferences. That's kind of my target audience. I mean, I'll go speak anywhere because apparently I really like to do it. So it was actually one of my biggest fears that I overcame in January, and ever since then, forget it, you can't shut me up.
Well, you know, there's an underlying thing here. I, you know, as I matured and continue to mature, and then you look back. Steve, have you ever seen Steve Jobs' address to Stanford University, commencement address?
No, I haven't.
It's brilliant. It is absolutely brilliant. And he talks about these dots that you go through in your life that you don't understand why you're doing what you're doing at the time, but later on that dot connects with another dot, and as you look back and you go, oh, that's why that happened. For example, he went to a college that taught calligraphy, and he loved calligraphy, and he took every calligraphy class he could. And he says if he had not, when he built the word processing aspect of Apple computers, if he had not taken those courses, then there would not be a choice of fonts. There wouldn't even be the choice of fonts on PCs because Bill Gates, who ripped off Steve Jobs' operating system, the fonts were already on there. So the reason that we have choice of fonts is because Steve Jobs took a calligraphy class.
How funny.
And he said that only came back to him when we look at it. So, what you know, the knowledge that I have, and it's not a belief or a theory or anything, it's the knowledge, what I've learned is we all start in life and we're all distracted and we all go in this direction of accepting what the schools say or the company say or society says. And we all kind of drift off from what our real purpose is, but somehow we get back to it.
It always comes back somehow.
Yeah.
For me, it was my son, you know, right in front of me. And I went, wow, can't do what I've always done with this one. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think it all comes back around. Each one of us.
Yeah, and that thing, that reason that we came here. Now, a lot of people miss it, and a lot of people ignore it. A lot of people don't trust it. They know that there's a gnawing. You know, I mean, I always try to tell people about, to me, it took me 66 years to find the book, but I finally did. The one that answered it all was called The War of Art by Stephen Pressling, and he was the guy who wrote The Legend of Bag of Ants, and he basically said, look, there's two lives. Two lives we have, the one we're living and the one we want to live. The only thing keeping you from the one you want to live is a thing called resistance. And he says, and I don't care whether you call it lethargy, laziness, whether you call it alcoholism, whether you call it depression, whether you call it disease, whatever. It's all lumped under one thing, the thing that tries to keep you from what you really are. And he says, there's only one way to go to war with it, and is that a get up and every single day, every chance you get, do the thing that you love to do, the passion, the thing, connect with it, do it, do it, do it. And there is a thing called the muse. Now, it has many different names, and everybody gives it a different name, but there is a spirit aspect to us all. And it's there. And it is that voice. If we call it the voice or whatever, it is there. And if you knock on the door every day, it hears you and says, oh, why? You're listening. You're receptive. You're asking me questions. Let me give you some answers.
Yeah.
And then it tells you, you're not supposed to be doing this. You're not supposed to be jumping in a car every day and spending a couple hours away from your kids, getting there, a couple hours getting back, and then spending 8 hours being miserable. No. Wake up. You're an artist or you're a teacher or you're a nurse or you're a whatever.
Whatever it is. And, you know, a lot of the spirituality, you mentioned the law of attraction earlier in the show. There's so many people that don't know any of that.
Right.
And especially, I've noticed, I didn't know any of that 2 years ago, and especially in the teaching profession, they don't have any idea.
Nope. It's a component.
I mean, that's another thing I want to bring up and start teaching parents. I mean, I hear people say, well, the baby knows, you know, if mom's upset, the baby can feel it. They get it, but they're not really getting that it's the energy that they're feeling.
Exactly.
And that you can just change that.
The biggest part of us is invisible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not this flesh and bones.
No.
If it was.
It's so much more than that.
You know, why is one person, if it's in a contest or a sport, why is one usually more victorious? You know, it isn't just the physical. It's that spirit. You see it, and you go, how can they do what they're doing? It's that spirit that we all have that moves us past it. You know, I said something to, there's a woman who has this most beautiful gardens around a restaurant, and I kept wanting to stop and ask her. I'm a gardener myself, and I stole so many ideas from her. I went, oh, look at that company. Oh, I got to get that business. And so she was my hero, and I wanted to meet her. And one day I was walking by, and there she was doing Christmas ornaments with greens and things, and just brilliant what she was doing. And I said, are you the one that does it? And she goes, yes. And she explained, I says, oh, are you a gardener? Are you a landscaper? Do you do? She says, no, I'm a waitress here. I said, a waitress?
Oh.
And I said, and you're doing this kind of work, which, oh, yeah, I love it. And I said, excuse me. I said, is there any way you can not do this? And she said, no.
I have to do it.
I have to do it. And I had never heard, you know, I don't know why I asked the question the way I did, but you see, that's the thing, if you want to say to everybody, every hopefully mother or woman, or even if the fathers are listening, that's the part, that's the voice, that's the thing, to pay attention to what you love, your passion, that you'll get up and do automatically. And then step back from yourself and ask yourself, why do you want to do, can you really live a happy, fulfilled life and shut that down and not ever do it again?
And I'm seeing so many shifts in people that are starting to do what they are so passionate about, because the first response is, yeah, but I can't make money doing that.
Yep, there you go.
Well, how do you know you can't make money doing that?
That's right.
Because if you love to do it, how do you know there aren't other people that want to learn how to do it or need it done for them?
That's right. That's right. And again, it's the fear and it's the unknown. How do you think? So how do the other people get to do it? How did Steve Jobs get to do it?
Exactly.
You know,
He did it. He leaped. He jumped.
Yes. That's right. And then again, what kind of example are you setting for your kids? Oh, I brought you into the world so you can live like me. Hello?
Like me. Yeah. You know,
yeah, but
here
mommy,
she
I
is,
don't think,
busted. That
I don't
poor
think,
lady
I don't think
her butt
right,
being a waitress, you know, which I'm sure is fine, but if she's doing, you know, this wonderful, beautiful work that you're walking by going, oh, my gosh, you know, there's
right.
got to be tons of people. I mean, I can't even grow a bamboo, so I need a gardener. I'd like to
exactly.
have my own garden, grow my own vegetables, but when you kill a bamboo, I mean, I even talk to it, I gave it love, I don't know. I say
so
you can make money doing anything.
Exactly.
As long
so
as
if you
love it.
If you were to meet some person you see struggling and living this life far from the potential that person has, you know, what do you say to, how do you wake them up? Well, first of all, was there a book that woke you up?
There really wasn't.
It was your son.
It was mostly my son. I guess there was a couple of different things. My son came along, and he was very different. He came home from the hospital. I went, what the heck is wrong with this kid? He's broken. I knew right from the moment he came home, there was something different. And yep. I started doing self-development. I started surrounding myself with positive people that were doing what they loved to do and making money doing it. And I thought, why can't I do that?
Isn't that beautiful?
I think I'm going to.
Beautiful. Well, you're right. We are the shining examples. We are the ones who are being the trailblazers, the ones who are the pioneers, the ones who go off into the wilderness. You know, we may not be the Lewis and Clarks. I mean, they were. But we are the ones, the second wave that's following through. A lot of people have done it before us. And we're hoping that, you know, by doing it and by sticking to our guns and feeling the joy every day and watching the miracles, and I will defend that they are truly miracles. You know, mm-hmm. Alan Watts, who was a great philosopher, and I was fortunate enough to find him in my 20s, and then recently find him through the miracle of YouTube. Most of his lectures are on there. And he said, you know, everybody is, you know, the new religion is science and blah, blah, blah. And he said, and science obviously is is brilliant, even though science itself, the principles of science change every 10 to 20 years. And what was science at one time, it changes. But he says the one thing that science cannot teach you and cannot explain is a transcendental experience, you know, a transformational experience. And obviously you had that with your son, right?
I did. I just knew that. And as I met other people that were living their life differently, I grew up with this one vision of life, and it was a box, and I didn't step outside of the box. You start hanging around people that step out of the box, and you say, wait a minute, I can do that.
That's right.
So surround yourself with people that are like that and passionate.
Right, and guess what? This, if you make this choice, it is not going to be easy.
No. But
if it were easy, everybody would be doing it.
That's right.
And so you've got to have the conviction and the character and the ability to slug it out and not to fall back. And you have to go to war with the resistance.
Yeah, and you have to
get up every day and do.
A lot of people that were in my life before are not in my life now.
Exactly.
You know, they've fallen away. And maybe sometime they'll come back. And maybe they won't.
No, they won't. No, they and that's one of the, you know, the expanding of consciousness as you start to understand is like, but you were the one who changed the movie.
Yeah. Yep. I made the change. I changed the movie. I changed the pattern for my kids. I'm teaching them differently than I was taught. I'm sure I'll make mistakes, because we all do.
Right. But you've seen the effect immediately that they are happy.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. And that,
what a concept.
And that bond, that gift that you've given them will carry you and them and make your connection stronger and better throughout all of their lives.
Yeah, yeah. I believe so.
Great. Well, I can't tell you how thrilled that we were to do this, and that to me this whole miracle of Blog Talk Radio and the internet and computers and everything else, it enables us to make friends with people that are thousands of miles away.
It's amazing.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
And
I think
you get those like-minded people together, and it really is amazing.
Yeah, and that we can connect, and I know we'll be friends, and I know that this is part of the evolution that, you know, you all of a sudden pop into my reality, and my pop into your reality, and
yeah.
And we can one by one, you know, the movement starts and you can get the message out. And I hope some of the things I said today about the facts, you know, that, gee, isn't it interesting that when women decided they want to go have careers, that they wanted to have equal pay or close to equal pay, that they wanted to have credit, that they want to have the ability to own a home, that they wanted to set what the mores would be inside a corporation to determine what was sexual. All of those things came to pass. Yet,
yeah.
This the one that could be the most powerful one of all for our society, this thing about being able to stay home with your kids and get paid for it and nurture and grow them, nobody's making that a priority. And maybe it should be.
That's right.
And
yeah.
believe me, if when women decide that that will become the issue, it will happen.
I love it. All right, ladies, let's go.
Well, you know, I've got a perfect song to close out the show. It's by a gal named Joni Leeds, and I absolutely love it. And I think it says everything that we're trying to do here. It's called Bandwagon. And we're going to close out with this. I can't thank everybody who stayed with us long as you have. Michelle, let's do it again, all right?
I would love it. Thank you so much for having me.
You're a great guest, and I'd love you to guest host the show with me sometime.
I would love to, anytime.
Okay, and everybody, just get up on that bandwagon. Tom Hayes, Block Talk Radio, Beantown Pals, use your bean, trust your heart, build your character, and have a beautiful Tuesday. Thank you.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3.
Get up, get on the bandwagon. Just get up on it. Get up, get on the bandwagon. Just get up on it. Get up, get on the bandwagon. Get up, get on the bandwagon. Get up, get on the bandwagon. Just get up on it.
I brought my voice today, get up on it. I'm gonna make some noise today, get up on it.
Get up, get on the bandwagon, just get up on it. Get up, get on the bandwagon, just get up on it. Get up, get on the bandwagon, get up, get on the bandwagon. Get up, get on the bandwagon, just get up on it.
I brought my banjo today just to get up on it. I can begin strumming all day just to get up on it.
Get up, get on the bandwagon. Just get up, get up on it. Get up, get on the bandwagon. Get up, get on the bandwagon. Get up, get on the bandwagon. Just get up on it.
I wanna tickle the ivory today.
Get up on it.
Why don't you stick around and hear me play? Just
Get up on it.
Here I go, here I go.
Get up, get on the bandwagon. Just get up on it. Get up, get on the bandwagon. Get up, get on the bandwagon. Get up, get on the bandwagon. Just get up on it. Get up, get on the bandwagon. Just get up on it. Get up, get on the bandwagon. Just get up on it. Get up, get on the bandwagon. Get up on the bandwagon, just get up on it.
Use your being, trust your heart, build your character.